Good evening. Welcome to the show. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. And Tim, we've been talking over the last few weeks of some of the more creepy type of creatures. Everything from the black-eyed kids to shadow people, even dark encounters with Bigfoot, right? I mean, going after strange versions of these stories. But there's one that's really kind of been gnawing at me for a while now, because there are so many layers to this story. And I think this needs to be looked at much more carefully, because there are a lot of chilling ramifications to what's going on. And the character I'm talking about, Tim, is Slender Man. Now, we've talked about Slender Man in bits and pieces throughout the years on Darkness Radio. But the idea behind what this creature is, what this being might be or represent, really opens up a lot of fascinating possibilities. So I wanted to reach out to somebody that had a handle on the situation and maybe a better understanding on this, because tonight we're going to investigate Slender Man, from internet meme to inspiration for murder. Joining us on the show is Robin Swope. He's a writer and is currently the pastor of St. Paul's United Church of Christ in Erie, Pennsylvania. He's also a freelance journalist for TheExaminer.com and has also written for Fate Magazine. As a seminary-trained exorcist, he has done consulting with various paranormal investigators and television productions in the United States, as well as investigators and writers across the globe. His book, Slender Man, From Fiction to Fact, is what we're going to look at for the first half of tonight's show. Has a fictional internet character come to life? Slender Man was created as an internet meme, Tim. This was a contest to create something weird and eerie, and it seems to have taken on a life all its own. Or, as we've discussed on the show, has it always existed, and it's just been waiting for the chance to rear its ugly head again?
Maybe.
Well, let's talk with our guest now, Reverend Robert Swope. Reverend Swope, thank you for joining us this evening.
How you doing?
Good. This is one of the more bizarre stories to leap from the internet into the real world and back again. What drew your attention to exploring this strange story?
Well, I saw it on the internet, and it struck a chord with me because I've had a lot of encounters with different shadow type entities throughout the years, and it sounded very similar to a lot of the things that I had heard about before. And that other people have encountered as well. So, and when I first read about it, it sort of sent a chill down my spine, too, because, you know, it's one of those things that is always there and can get you at any time. So it's a very always present, omnipresent type of danger type of thing.
The real boogeyman.
Like a logical cord.
Talk to me a little bit about the history of this creation. As I mentioned, he was created back in June of 2009 as an internet contest. Can you give us a little bit of history on that and how he sprang to life?
Yes, in Something Awful forums, there was a Create Paranormal Images contest thread to create images and use them to trick people in paranormal forums to thinking that they were genuine paranormal experiences and incidents. So the user started photoshopping images by adding fake ghosts and all kinds of other things like that. And this man, whose screen name is Victor Surge, on June 10th of 2009, posted a thread with two photos with an explanation that the entity was stalking children. And Mr. Surge included the photos that had details that they were taken on the day which 14 children disappeared. And the library where the photo was found was burnt down the week after the photo was taken. And it had a Photoshop Slenderman entity in the background. And since then, it's come, it's taken off. There's been all type of different alternate reality games, such as Marble Hornets. Giant Slenderman mythos is built up, where a lot of people are combining reality with this meme, this imaginary character.
And when you give energy to something, when you begin focusing on something, is there any biblical principles to creation that way of making something come to life simply by giving it thought and attention?
Oh, like a thought form or tulpa type of thing. That's more of a Buddhist belief, really. Tulpa and thought form imagery comes with Buddhist mysticism and magic. Whereas in the with biblical theology, that these entities are there, and we're not supposed to interact with them because they are deceiving. But in history, if you look back, shadow creatures have been around since the beginning of written time. Ancient Mesopotamia, the Sumerians believed in the Gedim, which were approaching blackness or sick spirit, they called it. And they were a shadow being that took the memory and personality of deceased people. And families of the dead at that time were to make offerings to the deceased, either suffering of these people in the netherworld, or the Gedim would strike them with misfortune and illness. So shadow creatures have been around for as long as mankind's been around. And Slenderman seems to be one of those type of unclean spirits, you could say in biblical terms.
And you've got this weird archetype that's built, right? This faceless, tall, lanky, creepy creature that stalks in the darkness. His not only is his body very spindly, but he in some cases has spider-like legs that come out of his back. And this character, I mean, there are so many internet creations every year. Why do you think this one took hold and footing to become such a pop icon, if you will? Because, I mean, as you said, it launched video games, books, stories, short stories. There's movies, documentaries, all of these things coming to light now because of this one internet creation. Yeah. Why do you think this one took such root?
Well, it hits at all the boogeyman stereotypes that we have written, like the archetype that's written in our core being. Every single civilization has a dark boogeyman. There's the tall black man of the southwestern Indians, the stovetop pipe hat person. And even in the biblical literature, if you go way back to ancient Hebrew culture, we have the shadow of death. You know, we always recite the 23rd Psalm. It's the Soloveth, the shadow of death. It's more of a thing. It's like a ghost, a ghostly netherworld shadows. So it strikes a core part of our being of the netherworld and the darkness that encompasses death. And really, Slenderman is a type of archetype of death because it will pursue you throughout your life, from your youth until it actually gets you and kills you.
What we found really weird and fascinating about this character is that it was new. They could pin a date to its creation on the internet. And all of a sudden, you've got strange stories popping up, people claiming to actually see this creature, this being, in the woods, following them home. In photographs, it's shown up. And I understand there are a large grouping of them that are fakes, that are meant to continue the mythos of this beast. But then there are others who wholeheartedly believe that they have encountered this creature. And in researching this on our side, and what I loved about the book that that you've written, is that you do take a deeper look into this phenomenon, and that this being has seemed to have been around much longer than June 10th, 2009. It's been there and has been part of other belief systems, religions, theories. This boogeyman archetype has always been there in the background. How far back were you able to find versions of this specific character?
Well, if you look, every culture does have a Slenderman archetype. There is, well, like I said, we go back all the way to the Gidim and the Salaveth. And there's an ancient Egyptian ghost creature. Oh, and I forget what the names are with those, though. But it's almost like, they're almost connected to like the Babadook type of creature in some way phonetically, because it always begins with Baba or Abba. And it goes back with those type of things to the medieval times, is when they fixated upon them and sort of put them sort of in the category of the night spirits, the succubus, the incubus type of things. But like I said, as long as there's been written history, there has been talk of shadow creatures and shadow people in the darkness. And Slenderman is just the 21st century of an age-long thing that has been attached to humanity.
Now that people are reporting seeing this in the real world, do you believe that what's going on, and understanding, you know, the war that's going on between the dark and the light, do you believe that there is something more to this than just some maybe over-imaginative people? Do you think that something is taking this visage in order to frighten or perhaps inspire people to do malicious things?
Well, with my exorcist training and involvement with demonic spirits or malevolent spirits, whatever you wish to call them, a lot of them feed off of emotions, and especially the more violent ones feed off of fear. So if they can make you think that there is a demon around every corner, if they're the shadow moving is Slender Man, more the good for them, because they will feed off that fear. And spirits are lying and they're deceiving. There's a lot of spirits that mimic. They mimic people. They mimic things like Slender Man for their own ends, mostly for feeding off of the energy. But also just fear and the power. So sometimes you can't tell with the spirits if it's really Slender Man or they're taking on the guise of Slender Man for their own purpose.
Dealing with exorcism and possession, do you find that there are times that people are morphed into creatures? I don't know how else to put it. I've never been there face to face, but I've heard encounters when people are in the midst of a deep exorcism where the facial features can change, where bodily parts change and twist and turn. Is this more machinations of Hollywood, or is this a reality to possession and exorcisms?
Well, there's a reality to that in real possession and exorcism. I take a viewpoint that is more psychologically oriented, because I've seen many abuses. I've been involved with this for 30-some years. Abuses of power, abuses of people. You know, when you tell somebody that they have an undying spirit that's eternal fighting at them and trying to reside in them, that's a pretty big thing, you know. A lot of the things that we see and some people report are psychological conditions, like the animal contortions. That can go, I've seen that psychologically as well with people. And if you really do an exorcism, it is a counseling session. You're getting deep into their personality, why they think they're possessed, what sins or addictions that they might have, all types of stuff. And feral actions and feral personalities popping out of in-depth counseling sessions are not something that's unique just to exorcisms. So you have to be really careful. Those things can happen, but you got to be very careful, because some of the people who do exorcisms in their part-time weren't like trained theologians or pastors or anything. You got to be careful if you don't have insurance, because you can actually be sued if you tell somebody who has a psychological problem that they have a demonic problem. So you got to be very careful about that and weed everything out. I always say you never can't be sure that the person is possessed, because the psychological mimics so much, unless you have something supernatural or paranormal take place while you're there.
Have you encountered people that are embroiled in the paranormal that believe that they have encountered this being themselves?
Oh, yeah, yes. When I first wrote about Slender Man in July of 2011, so it was pretty close, and I got thousands and thousands of emails, many from people in the paranormal movement, some from pastors even, who have encountered this entity before its creation in 2009. And many people, even till this day, I still get emails and contact from people who think that they've encountered a Slenderman type of being.
When they encounter this being, is there any kind of communication? Is there any kind of physical confrontation at all?
You know, usually with the Slenderman entity and its type, it's silence. There's no talking. I've heard some growling. But that is very rare. More, it's an imposing threat. It's something looming over them. Intimidation and fear. And it's always distant.
Now, when you say you hear growls, have you physically encountered this being as well?
I've never personally encountered a Slender Man, but I've encountered many shadow beings. And I've heard growls. I've heard different types of sounds, too, with shadow creatures. And some people have encountered physical pushing and different things from shadow creatures. I'm sure you have further stories about that. I personally have not. I have had some very odd encounters with shadow creatures, some even making beds for people.
Now, those are the kind I need to have at my house, Reverend
Swope. That's exactly what I said, yeah.
Right.
That's not a problem.
No, those are fine, shadow people. If they could do that and whip me up a sandwich, I'd be okay with the paranormal visiting me on a regular basis.
Yeah, a ghost maid.
The Slender Man figure, though, I know that there are different types of spirits and entities, you know, harbingers, haunts, and so on. Does this fall into a specific category for a type of haunting, or does this fit more just strictly into the realm of the demonic?
You know, it's really hard to say because some of the encounters with Slender Man really aren't a Slender Man creature. They can be different things that mimic. So with those are the mimicking spirits. Some are shadow creatures, and they're an entity, I think, within themselves. Some people will put them into the demonic category, but you rarely have a shadow creature assaulting. And everyone that I have encountered that I've really investigated, I found it kind of dubious. A long time ago, Brad Steiger and other researchers would say that they're really an alternate universe that is bleeding into our own. And sometimes I wonder that about shadow creatures.
Right, and we've heard that theory as well. I know when we spoke with Heidi Hollis and Rosemary Ellen Guiley back on the 2nd of January about shadow people, they had some encounters that it got very physical with these beings. And in some cases, you know, again, nobody's really sure. Heidi believes that it is definitely more demonic, maybe even alien in nature, which brings me to the idea with the Slender Man. I mean, the way he is often seen with, you know, long, tall, spindly body parts, black and white suit, sometimes with a hat, sometimes without. But then you have this kind of elongated face. It almost sounds alien in nature as well. Have there been any of these people that encountered Slender Man that think that this may be an alien race that we're up against?
I did have somebody who, and I'm not saying all the shadow creatures, because there are demonic spirits that do mimic, so they do manifest themselves as shadow creatures and attack. But the alien thing, I knew somebody who her best friend actually had an encounter that was like a night terror situation, and at the end of the bed was a Slender Man type entity. She felt something on the back of her neck, so she went to the doctor and had an x-ray. It was an implant, and she kept having these encounters as an abductee with the Men in Black type thing, but it was with the elongated arms at a distance stretching out to her, and the face was not very visible. It was there, and it was white, but it wasn't. So it was like a classic Slender Man, but this was, I believe, in 2003. So it was many years beforehand.
Oh, all right. So this even was a precursor to the famed Slender Man being that we're dealing with at this point.
black suit, black tie, white shirt. Yeah. Weird.
Huh. Yeah. There, you know, there's so much that people are intrigued by with the supernatural and the paranormal. By focusing and researching and opening these doors, does it make you prone to a visit from something, perhaps with a more nefarious intentions to it?
Well, I've long noticed that people who have one paranormal encounter will usually have many more. There's usually a catalyst event that happens that either makes them sensitive or opens up the universe in a new way to people that they can experience different things. Stan Gordon, a researcher here in western Pennsylvania, has been doing research with UFOs and Bigfoot for many years. And he's noticed that some of the people who have Bigfoot encounters then go on to have UFO encounters or even demonic possession incidents. In the 70s and 60s, he had some of those. And some people will have a UFO encounter in a crowd, and in the crowd, people will see nothing. So it's very odd what will be a catalyst, but it seems something does happen to trigger something genetic, spiritually, psychologically, who knows? But there are events that trigger to open us up to all types of paranormal events.
And as somebody who researches the paranormal and has a firm grounding in theology, is this type of being, when you're talking about things like the Slender Man or some of these other shadowy creatures, how do I want to put this? I know that in your book, you kind of cover the fact that, you know, there's this kind of a modern myth angle to it, but that it's a demonic force that's kind of hunting humans and has for hundreds of years. Is there anything we can do to protect ourselves from encounters like this?
Well, you know, you always battle darkness with light. So always think on the light side. You know, it's not just a Monty Python song, you know. But, yeah, dwell on the light. Dwell on the goodness. Because especially if you're dealing with this type of stuff on a regular basis. Because there's an old saying from Babylon 5 that I like. And I'm sure it's from someplace else. If you study darkness, darkness studies you. And that's very true. So filling yourself with light, prayers, blessings, that type of thing, and that protects you. Ask for angelic help, but always battle the darkness with light and the evil with good.
But if people are seeking this, give them a warning. I mean, what can they expect if they are actively pursuing a being like Slender Man to try to make contact to see if it exists?
Well, yeah, anything that you, whenever you try to encounter a demonic force, you will encounter it one way or the other. And we always have these Hollywood stereotypes in our brain. Oh, my goodness, you know, blood walls, voices, eyes turning black or white, and all that stuff. No, that's not what happens. What happens is usually addiction comes in, or some psychological problems, or stress, fighting, violence that never was there before. That type of thing is where Satan and the demonic realm dwell. Manipulation and destruction of human beings at a core level. Not frightening us in a Hollywood level, but really destroying us from the inside out.
Well, thank you very much for joining us for this segment. We appreciate it. The book is called Slender Man, From Fiction to Fact. We'll have a link up to that on the Podcast One website so that you can find that for yourself. And right now, the edges of darkness seem to be calling us deeper into the inky blackness of real-life encounters here in the theater of the mind and face-to-face with the Slender Man. As I was walking home one night, I saw a stranger by a light. His arms were long, his head was small. I've never seen a man so tall. His arms reached out and grabbed me tight. I went along without a fight. I looked and saw he had no face, and then my heart began to race. He spoke to me without a sound and picked me up right off the ground. The Slender Man took me away to never see new light of day. The true tale of the terrifying touch of Slender Man. Something very strange happened to me last night. Something I still can't quite understand. It was about 9:55 when it happened. It was about time for me to be getting to bed, so I took my 10-year-old mutt Daisy out for her last bathroom break for the night. I've been having problems with nausea and severe headaches. This always seemed to happen when I was about to encounter the tall man, the faceless man. As I stood in the strip between the fence of the next door neighbor's fence and my own, I watched Daisy trot off into the darkness. Then, the feeling of a dark weight began to set in. I knew I was being watched, but I couldn't tell from where. I had my back to the street for a few seconds as I tried to pinpoint my observer's position. Then I remembered where I saw him last time. He had stood beneath the street lamp across from my home, which was directly behind me. I turned around to see him there again, watching me. I froze, just as I had last time, and then began to bite the inside of my cheek to keep myself from screaming. My mother was still inside and awake, so I couldn't call out and draw her from safety. I felt my eyes go wide as panic shot through me like a lightning bolt. My muscles coiled and my heart began racing. I stood like this for maybe 5 or 10 seconds before I blinked. What happened next was a little too much for me to comprehend. In the split second it took to open my eyes, he had crossed the street, came into the tiny strip of yard I was standing in, and he stood just inches from me. There he was. He slowly began to hunch over until his featureless face was level with mine. The power of his eyeless gaze had me locked in place. I was so scared that I could feel a lump of vomit rising in my throat. I tried to move, but every muscle was locked in place. Then it happened. My eyes were drawn up to a bit of motion near the lower right of my vision. A pale, thin hand drew up. His icy fingers grazed downward across my face. The feeling was one I could only describe as terrifyingly cold. Mind you, it was April in Tampa, Florida. What I felt was definitely his icy, bony fingers stroking my face. I squeezed my eyes tight, not sure what to expect when I would eventually open them. When I finally gathered the nerve to open them, all I saw was the lamppost and the light from across the street. Daisy trotted up behind me and gave me a small yip, then jumped onto my legs as though hugging me. It was over. Just like that. I lie awake now. My mind races and it fills with questions. Why? Why would he want to touch me? He had a perfect opportunity to take me, to hurt me, but he didn't. Why not? Does this touch mean anything? I'm really scared and I have no clue what's going to happen to me, or worse, those around me.
Up next, Micah Hanks joins us to talk about the legend of Slender Man on Beyond the Darkness.
All right, let me break this. If there's anyone here, you can speak to me now through this device.
Not Ted, man.
How many people are here with me right now? Where exactly are you?
All right, we're back now. Joining us on the air for the remainder of the show, Micah Hanks. He is a writer, podcaster, and researcher whose interests cover a wide variety of subjects. His area of focus includes history, science, philosophy, current events, cultural studies, technology, unexplained phenomena, and ways the future of humankind may be influenced by science and innovation in the coming decades. He's also written the foreword for David Weatherly's new book, Strange Intruders, which just came out this past August. And in this book, they do cover the topic of Slender Man. We talked a little bit in the first segment with Reverend Robin Swope about this supernatural being, this internet meme that seems to have come to life, and how there are these roots in different belief systems and religions that actually Slender Man may not have been a recent invention. This creature may have always existed in one form or another, but now he seems to have leapt from the page or the internet, if you will, to an inspiration for murder. Micah, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, Dave, great to be here with you, man.
Has there ever been a character like this that has captured the attention of so many people, that, that goes from this internet contest to video game celebrity to now there's documentaries and films being made about him and true crimes. I mean, three that I can think of off the top of my head that, that have to do directly with the Slender Man. Is this new ground or has this happened before?
Well, there are similar things to this, and I'll just tell you this also. When you study the unexplained, I tend to take, as many know, what I call a kind of a purist or a sort of really, I think, a modern skeptic approach to this. So in order to understand a lot of this, one has to also understand sociology. We could go back, and I think that, sure, there are those archetypal characters like Death or even the Devil that have kind of proliferated throughout history. And you might say that Slender Man is just one kind of reworking of that classic bogeyman. But what we do know about this character is that I think there's one really strong force behind it that has helped it, unlike perhaps other instances or manifestations of cultural evil in different traditions over the years, and that's quite obviously the internet. Slender Man really took off as a result of the World Wide Web. Of course, what we know about these famous killings that you refer to, the most famous of them, the one that you might say put Slender Man on the map, was May 31st, 2014. We had two 12-year-old girls from Wisconsin, and they had basically just become fascinated with Slender Man. So much so that they decide to lure one of their playmates into a wooded area, and that playmate ended up being stabbed 19 times. Now, this act, of course, again, inspired by a faceless internet meme of sorts that is not believed to exist, but these girls definitely thought it was something that they felt that they could become proxies of. That was the term used, proxies of Slender. It first appeared on Something Awful websites and then the Creepypasta website and other social media, but really, I mean, what we're talking about here, like you say, is something that's a little different in the sense that there is action put behind belief in this thing. And so I've been interested in that. For instance, with this first case, we do know that an examination of some of the belongings of one of the young girls, and of course, being 12 years old at the time, we won't mention their names here. But there were things that were found in her belongings at her home that included a sketch of Slender Man that was apparently laughing and telling the viewer to run in this drawing. The drawings were quite good. The girls were quite artistic. There was a similar sketch of a girl standing over a dead body holding a knife, which seemed to almost kind of be a foreshadowing of things to come. And there was a speech bubble coming from the would-be killer in the drawing that said, "I love killing people." That's really wholesome, huh? You know, you've got the words, "I want to die," inscribed in other images. We've got pictures of girls hugging Slender Man that almost look kind of like a Japanese anime or manga. And a number of other kinds of things. There were mutilated dolls that were kept in the girl's room, and an alleged list of supplies needed for this apparent stabbing that was actualized. Now, fortunately, the young victim did survive, and that's the good side of things. But, of course, we had similar cases like you mentioned. We also had, after the May 2014 stabbing, on June 5th of that year, a 13-year-old girl from Ohio had swung a knife at her mother. Purportedly, she'd been wearing some sort of a white mask, and her mother believed that this also might have been inspired by Slender Man. And then just 4 days later, on June 9th of that year, we had another man who was accused of killing two cops and a civilian. He ended up committing suicide with his wife in Las Vegas the following Sunday, but his neighbors had told the authorities that he, quote, dressed up in a costume as Slender Man. That was something he did on the weekends, apparently. So this was, I think, an unprecedented case where we had a lot of different people, some of them young, some adult, some older and should have known better, who were nonetheless influenced by this viral meme, this bogeyman of sorts. Now, what was it that was different about Slender Man? I guess that would be the character, but Dave, you'd asked if there were any similar cases, and I do have a short list. If we've got time, we can just go down a few of these here.
Yeah, but I want to ask one thing that was kind of intriguing to me regarding a few of these stories. I know there was a fire set in another story where the boy was trying to kill the mother and sister, I believe, and set fire to the house. And believe that by doing this, much like those two girls in Wisconsin, that by doing this murder, it would somehow open up this mystical doorway or allow these children entrance to Slender Man's palace or realm. And has that been a part of the internet meme itself? Is that part of how you call upon Slender Man, is by making sacrifices to him?
You know, to my knowledge, again, there is this concept of there being a proxy to Slender. In other words, you actualize Slender's gathering of souls or whatever it is that he seeks to do. Slender Man generally is just described as a tall entity. It can cause anything from just bouts of coughing to extreme confusion and disorientation. Again, according to the mythos that has been built up around this, it's an entirely fictional character. I mean, in fact, the creator, it came about around the time of these various crimes, he had been very concerned about the fact that something that he would cook up on a website like Creepypasta or something awful would become something that people would try to actualize like this. So I guess you might say this. There are varieties of the different interpretations of the mythos of Slenderman. A lot of that, I think, was built onto it after its creator actually initialized this with those drawings and the various memes that would appear online that were mostly photoshopped images of a very tall, you know, slender man, of course. You know, he had no face. Often there would be tentacles sprouting out of the back. You know, a couple of quick and rather weird side notes. You know, people tend to see things like this, and they don't just create their own renderings. They will tend to go a little further with it and even look for things that are similar to Slenderman. We had a painting by Hans Boldung Grain that I think dated all the way back to the 1500s. It was missing for years, and when it was rediscovered in 2003, they did x-ray analysis on it, and they found that there had been different positioning of the arms of the character of Death in this painting, which under x-ray, it looked normal to the eye when just looking at the painting, but the x-rays seemed to show a multi-armed character, and everybody said, "See there, God? It's Slenderman!" So I think that some of these things were built onto the mythos thereafter, if that sort of answers the question. That tends to be how folklore works.
Well, people have now started to not only, you know, it's one thing to kind of have popped a cord, if you will, and believe that by killing someone in a sacrificial way, it'll give you attention of this creature that doesn't exist. But there have been people that claim they have, in fact, encountered this being. They've seen him in the woods. They've seen him in parks. They've seen him in places like this. Now, again, we understand some of this starts to fold into the urban legend where everybody starts to become part of the story. But some of the people we've talked to that I have a lot of trust and respect in are really unnerved by this and have no explanation. And they're like, "Dave, I don't even want to go public with the fact that I've seen this guy. And I don't know how to deal with that. I don't know where to go with it. And I'm afraid if I talk about it, people are just going to think I'm nuts because it is a creation of the internet." So,
yeah, well, you know,
do you believe in tulpas? I mean, you've done so much research. When you think of tulpas, and we covered that briefly with the Reverend Robin Swope in the first segment, do you believe that thoughts and what so many people might be focused on may actually create an energetic pattern that would be recognizable as these memes?
Yes and no. You see, that's a really good question because I think that John Keel kind of in Western literature over the last, you know, few decades was the one who really kind of popularized that term tulpa, but there are different variations of it, thought form, things like this. The tulpa being, I think, really borrowed from the Tibetan and again, meaning essentially an intense focus meditation that can result in a physical manifestation. And this, of course, had ritualistic use in the Tibetan traditions in which it was featured. But in American folklore, I think, over the last few decades, in large part due to that reference being made in books like Mothman Prophecies by John Keel, people have tried to use this as an explanation for a variety of different paranormal phenomena in the context of, well, if enough people, if the you know, collective consciousness is focused enough on something, even if it is a fictitious creation like this, can it take on a certain sort of realistic manifestation? I think that, yeah, again, yes and no. It may not actually create, for instance, like a physical flesh and blood Slender Man. This may not be the answer to why there's Bigfoot running around out there, and yet evolutionary science tells us, no, that thing couldn't be. This may not be that kind of an answer, but I do certainly think, Dave, that part of what we're dealing with is the fear, and then I think the want to believe. Because that's why we enjoy these kind of ghost stories around campfires. There is a certain degree of wanting to believe in things that are scary. You may not really, at the end of the day, want that thing peeking in your window, but there's an enjoyment that we derive from that. And so the folklore and the mythology and the retelling of these kind of stories can, after a while, sort of build itself up into a sense of realism that for some people, I think it's a little difficult for them to kind of differentiate between. A few classical examples of this, well, maybe not going all the way back to antiquity, but I mean, these are classic in terms of, you know, folklore and Fortiana. We have Spring-Heeled Jack. I can't think of a better example of something that, although it changed over the years, it was something that really managed to cause quite the mass panic. There were different kind of iterations of it over the years, and I've even noted that, and I've noticed only maybe a few other people who've ever talked about this, Spring-Heeled Jack, dating back to the 1830s in London, this leaping lout, you know, this guy, he could leap over tall buildings, almost like Superman, but he also seemed to bear strange characteristics, including like a metallic breastplate and a helmet, these gauntlets or gloves that had claws befitted onto him, and it was also said he could belch blue flames. Now, taken mostly as folklore, what's weird about this is that The earliest reports of Spring Hill Jack describe, rather than this classic rendition we've just heard described, something that was more like a bear or something resembling a man in a bear suit that walked upright, much more animalistic. There were even later reports of these alleged Spring Hill Jack. As a matter of fact, this article here was taken off of the web, but dating back to 2012, I managed to find it thanks to the Wayback Machine at Internet Archive. And there's a article that was titled Terrified Family Confronted by Dark Figure on Bypass that told about something remarkably similar to the Spring Hill Jack character that was seen in England just back in 2012. In other words, it was a very dark, strange figure that just lurches across the road incredibly fast. It leaps up a hill, something that seemed to have moved unlike a human would be expected to move. But around the time of Spring Hill Jack, all the way up into the 1870s, we also had what was called the Peckham Ghost or the Park Ghost. We had Parak, the Spring Man of Prague, in a totally different part of the world, totally different time. This was World War II, but a very similar kind of a legend. And then in the around the year 2000, we had in New Delhi, England, what was known as the Monkey Man. Now, most people would call this, you know, some sort of a cryptid, some sort of a monster. But once again, in addition to those animalistic reports of a monkey-like creature, a humanoid kind of a creature, there were also reports of the Monkey Man that seemed to be more like a bandaged character or a mummy, or, and this is the crazy part, a humanoid fitted with a helmet, a breastplate, and claws. I mean, this is almost to a T, Spring Hill Jack. So what is it about these manifestations over time? Are they literal physical manifestations, or is it something archetypal? Dave, I think it's a little bit of both in a sense that if you want something to be real enough or if you were frightened enough by it, sure, that can become very real to you, but it may not be a literal manifestation through some sort of a magic as yet misunderstood or completely undiscovered by science.
The idea that, you know, we could literally be frightening ourselves to death. It's the and I wonder, and we're going to talk a little bit about this next week when we talk about killer encounters, Bigfoot, kind of unchained, more violent versions of that story. I've often wondered how many times have people predisposed to the idea of Bigfoot, been walking in the woods, seen something that appears tall and creepy, and they see these large eyes. Is it an owl in the distance whose eyes are reflecting back? But because of its positioning in the trees, people fill in the blanks and start to create these creatures, and their fear fills in the rest, and it makes it a very real situation, no less scary that they're misinterpreting it, but it looks, and for all intents and purposes, appears to be a very real thing at that moment. You know, I'm more impressed, and I don't know where you stand on this as a researcher, but by people who are maybe not as familiar with the legend and lore, and they see these things, report back, and then find out that it fits, you know, Bigfoot or Chupacabra or Slender Man, Black Eyed Kids, you know, Rawhead the Bloody Bones Man, any one of those strange intruders like that. That to me seems a little bit more believable and chilling when you bump into people that have no interest in what we look into and are interested in, and they're having these experiences because they have nothing to gain, and it's not like they're trying to impress their friends that like the paranormal by having that kind of encounter.
Well, you know, there are a variety of things I think that motivate people. And one problem I have with, you know, what we call maybe, you know, modern skeptic atheism or big S skepticism these days is it is so often presumed that the motivation when anybody makes an extraordinary claim, it is assumed that they are trying to profit from this or that they're, you know, in this for personal gain in some form or another. There may not be any direct profit that comes from it, but, you know, even if they don't make money or try to make money, their 5 minutes of fame, you know, according to that kind of a skeptical mind, it would be what they're after. And, you know, I think that in a way, this is almost a way to try and marginalize somebody and to try and strip them down without having to actually account for something unusual they may have experienced. You know, coming back to Slender Man and that idea of motivations, it's a different kind of a thing here, because what is it that motivates a person to do evil, you know, to harm others? You know, again, there's no gain that's going to be derived from this. And any logical person knows that, hey, if I go out and stab somebody, especially if I'm successful in committing the act of murder, I mean, I'm going to be put away for the rest of my life. So it's incredible to me the number of ways that the mind can be led to believe that something is beneficial. And so, you know, again, to make the distinction here, when it comes to claims of the paranormal, I don't think it's safe always to presuppose that people are just motivated by, again, the base desire of fame or fortune. But by the same token, there's also something extremely complex going on with some of these Slender Man type killings. And I'll just tell you again, The question is this a one-off? Is this a singular instance where a character of this sort is capable of influencing people to do these kinds of horrid acts? I really don't think so, and I'll give you a few reasons why. We can look at similar fiction-inspired cases. Now, granted, these aren't involving a mysterious character that, you know, tries to stalk children out in the forest or something like Slender Man is believed to do in the literature and folklore that's very recently become associated with it. But nonetheless, it is a fictitious character that has managed to influence a person to go out and commit a heinous crime. Similar instances that we could look at in recent memory might involve James Holmes. You know, July 20th, 2012, he tosses smoke bombs into a darkened movie theater and opens fire on the crowd. And this was actually during a screening of the film The Dark Knight Rises. He had dyed his hair, and he comes in there and he actually says, "I'm the Joker," when he's arrested later. We had Jake Evans, okay, who in 2012 personified the horror film Halloween. He had apparently killed his mother and his sister and later said that he had been fascinated by the screen killer Michael Myers from the Halloween films. You know, March 2014, we had a 14-year-old man named Eldon Samuel III, and he was charged with two counts of first-degree murder after being accused of killing his father and younger brother. Once again, after the fact, he tells police that he had a deep admiration for Trevor Phillips, a character from the Grand Theft Auto series, and had tried to emulate that character. You know, you've seen the television show Dexter. Well, in 2009, a teenager named Anthony Connelly was sentenced to life in prison after strangling his brother with his bare hands and saying that he, too, identified with the fictitious character, Dexter, the serial killer who kills serial killers. Okay. Now, 2001, we had a 24-year-old named Thierry Gerardin, who had stabbed his teenage neighbor 30 times and said that he, of course, had wanted to do this dressed up as the Scream killer. He had put on the mask, he'd put on the, you know, the black robe and carried out this act. So any number of similar cases like this do seem to exist. And I guess, you know, naturally it takes a fairly unhinged person, first and foremost, to try and emulate something that they see in a horror film. But it's quite obvious that this is something that people do. And I'm sure you guys have probably heard so much about it, as have I, that we're tired of hearing about it by now. But 2016 had this very unusual spate of sightings of these creepy clowns. Dave, I know you guys followed this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we certainly did. And they were popping up all over. But that was actually not something necessarily new. I think a lot of people are automatically dismissing it as just a couple of pranksters. But these killer clown sightings have been happening for, I think, going back almost 100 years, there's been sightings of these kind of ghostly clowns.
Been a lot of those kind of things. I think that they kind of appeared in popular consciousness, maybe by the late 70s or early 80s, but many people will go back and say that there were, you know, frightful renditions of clowns that, yeah, go back much further. I think what was unprecedented about 2016 and the clown panic that we just experienced, though, really had to do with the fact that we had not only sightings that you know, they began just, you know, one state away from me, literally about an hour away in Greenville, South Carolina. Then they came to my home state, and I'm thinking, oh, great, now we've got the clowns here. But within a few months, we had them in Canada, parts of Latin America, England. I mean, there were reports all over the world. And we even had sociologists that were trying to say that this was contempt or fear or concern leading up to the 2016 U.S. election. All different kinds of things were being cited as the possible root of this, what was, again, completely disputed as being just a social panic. But coming back to that idea of tulpas, Dave, you know, think about this one. Of course, yes, we know that people putting on a clown mask, of course, is the likely explanation for why people were seeing these creepy clowns. And yes, the merry prankster, the trickster idea. But see, that is a unique you know, situation where I think people can very easily, right in the, you know, the months leading up to Halloween, they go to the store, they can buy a clown suit, and they can very easily actualize and play into this growing, snowballing, in fact, mythos. And they did. They went out there and they, in a sense, they actualized it. If you want to say that that is in some way sort of like a tulpa, people going out there and due to the collective fear, they're getting in on the joke, in on the gag, so to speak, and going out, donning the clown masks themselves, following people around and doing things that are not only dangerous to other individuals, but dangerous to themselves. Because, you know, I was getting concerned at the number of people I was seeing on Facebook saying, you know, no creepy clowns allowed on this block. If you show up, right, we'll have our shotguns.
Yeah, we joked about that on Darkness Radio, too. I said it's been waiting, you know, watching the little clutch of woods by my house with my high powered pellet rifle ready to take out a seltzer bottle if I have to. You know, it was getting unnerving because you were seeing these people reporting them close to schools. So it was this kind of weird undercurrent wave of fear that started to come over. I thought at first, truthfully, that it had something to do with a viral promotion for Rob Zombie's new 31 movie, which I believe had some creepy killer clowns in it.
It certainly did.
Yeah, and then there's the reboot of Stephen King's It with Pennywise the Clown. And both of those were kind of dropped at the same time when all of a sudden these clowns started showing up. So I wondered how much of that was viral, and then suddenly they all backed off and they're like, hey, we're not going to take responsibility. Yeah, this started off as a promotional trick, but now it's gone beyond what we expected of it. And, you know, they stepped away, leaving it just an unsolved mystery of why people were doing this. Did they actually capture anybody and get an explanation of why they were out doing this type of thing?
You know, I don't remember hearing about the actual clowns themselves being arrested. I remember that there were at least two or three individuals who were arrested and later said that they had made up the reports of the clowns. But that seemed a little fishy to me, because I almost felt like it was more, almost like in a funny way, a mild psyop, in the sense that we're going to expose that people who said they were seeing these things actually were just making it up, so that everybody will just calm down. Nobody's actually seen any clowns. It was an effective way to steer that kind of a narrative. You know, again, I don't doubt, based on the number of videos that were showing up online, that people were actually donning clown costumes and going out there and acting like clowns, and that, yes, this, you know, in large part contributed to this bizarre clown panic of 2016. Slender Man, for instance, though, a little difficult to don a costume and to convincingly portray this sort of a character. But maybe I'll leave you with this, okay? There is a tradition among some of the Midwestern native tribes in America, and there was a government agent who I had corresponded with via email a number of years ago, and he had said that they'd gone to a town hall, a tribal town hall meeting, and he had said that many of the people there on the reservation were very angry and upset, because they said that there were a number of teenage suicides that were occurring on the reservation. And they believe that there was a character called Walking Sam that could explain this, and that they wanted the government to help them deal with Walking Sam. Now, they said, no, what is Walking Sam? And they said, well, Walking Sam is a very tall, thin character. He often wears a stovepipe hat, and he peers in our windows at night. And we know that he's linked somehow to the teenage deaths that are occurring on the reservation. And so I wrote a blog about this, and this is when I get the email from the very gentleman who I'd actually been citing the description from that town hall. And he said, do you know anything more about this Walking Sam character? Who is this tall, thin person that peers in windows and that they link these suicides to? And I said, honestly, I wish I could tell you. I was fascinated because I heard your story, and here he was emailing me hoping to try and find out more. So maybe, Dave, there are different renditions, cultural kind of things that seem to indicate a pervasive presence and a similar, you know, kind of a similarity between these archetypes as they manifest in different cultures. I still haven't figured out exactly what the Walking Sam thing is, but I'd love to hear from anybody out there if they have heard of that. You know, the only other thing I think I could liken to that was this one instance, and I'll make this quick. I had been out book hunting one night, and a very tall fella, really weird looking guy, wearing all black. He had hair that was jet black, but it looked like it was a toupee or something. He walks up next to me, and he's standing there, and he's talking to him, and he starts, Dave, it might have been the weirdest single conversation I've ever had in a bookstore. And he starts telling me all about Osama bin Laden and how, you know, he was one of ours. We actually trained that guy. And he keeps talking more and more about this really seemingly clandestine stuff. Now, it takes an awful lot to get me unnerved, but something about this guy, I don't know if it was appearance. It was really dark under his eyes, and that fake-looking dark hair and the black garb, everything was just really creepy. He was in his maybe, you know, late 40s, early 50s. Really nice guy, but just the things he talked about, just, I don't know. So I said, okay, cool. Yeah, man, thanks. So I eased away and got out of there. And I actually left, but I wasn't ready to go home and you know, end up the evening, you know, without the books I was looking for. So I actually drove across town. I went to a completely different bookstore all the way across town, hoping that this tall gentleman wouldn't be bothering me. And so fortunately, I'm standing there and I'm going through the books and things, and this very attractive young lady appears a few feet away from me, and I notice her, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, much better company than last time, right? I kid you not, wasn't a minute later, I hear, hi, honey, and I look over, and here on the other side of town, now accompanied by this beautiful young woman, is this 7 foot tall guy with the shaggy black mop of hair, the same one from the last store I'd been in. There he is. Apparently he was a book hunter too. I don't know if it was Slender Man, but I got the heck out of there pretty quickly.
Micah, we had one encounter that we reported on our show a number of years ago, long before I'd heard of the Slender Man sensation, and one that stuck with me. And It was local in Minnesota here. One of the listeners had talked to me about this. She went into Caribou Coffee in the morning, as she always did. She came out with her cup of coffee, and she's looking on her phone. She approaches her car. She stops at the end of her car, and there's a man in a dark suit standing there staring into her car window. And she's thinking, oh, my gosh, did I leave something in there? What's, you know, and she goes, excuse me, can I help you? And he turns to face her, and his face is completely blank. It's just like a skin flap. And it turns and looks at her slowly. And she said she just stood there and slowly backed up and walked back into Caribou Coffee, unsure what to do. She just stood there in the lobby until one of the baristas came over and said, ma'am, are you okay? And she said, I don't know. I just saw something. I don't know. And she explains to them, somebody's by her car. She didn't get into what the details of this was, but just that somebody she didn't know was standing staring into her car. So the baristas went out there. There's no one there. She's held up for about 10, 15 minutes. She gets into her car, takes off, heads to work. On her way into work, she gets caught behind this huge traffic jam. She eventually works her way up, finds out that there was this really horrible accident where there were a few deaths involved, and found out that the time that it occurred would have been around the time she would have been crossing that intersection had she not been held up. It would have happened around that exact same time. She kind of looked at it as though maybe it was a harbinger, some kind of doomsayer that was warning her off or warding her off from getting there. And that gave me the chills up and down my spine, the idea that this faceless creature was standing right next to her car. And it, in a sense, because of the distraction of this beast, it saved her life, she believes. That falls in like the Mothman categories, kind of the Slender Man categories, all of these weird allegories of creatures that we just have no idea what they're there for. Have you heard of these kind of faceless harbingers before?
You do hear these kind of things, and I'm not sure exactly what it is archetypally about that. We might say that from time to time there are these sorts of manifestations, these kind of cultural representations of different ghosts, demons, deities, divas, whatever, that they take different forms. They don't necessarily fall into the good or the evil camp. There's almost like this kind of a chaotically neutral kind of a very natural kind of in the actual sense of nature. They fall into nature into an area that is more difficult for human ideals to completely conceive of. And it's been said, of course, throughout history, evil takes many faces. Perhaps the only thing more frightening than one of these demonic faces is the absence of a face. And so be it with Slender Man. Again, good, evil, purely imaginary, or one of the many mythic representations of something that is perhaps so far beyond human ideals and understanding that we don't even conceive of exactly what it is, whether it's our own creation or a manifestation of something deeper within ourselves, an archetype perhaps. I couldn't tell you. But Slender Man has definitely, I think, and we can all agree on this, has had more of a cultural impact so far as a modern representation of whatever these sorts of things are. It has had more of an impact than typical urban legends tend to do. Those are usually relegated to the fun realm of stories. I don't think we can safely say that Slender Man is still that. When people are actualizing their belief systems and mythologies based around this kind of a character, we are dealing with a whole different kettle of fish, and that what faceless, whatever it is, seems to be the Slender Man phenomenon.
Micah Hanks, our guest. Check out the book. He's written the foreword for Strange Intruders by David Weatherly that goes into these characters and more. You can also check into Micah, hear his podcast, get more information, and find out about his projects by visiting MicahHanks.com. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week. For Tim Dennis, I'm Dave Schrader. Thank you for tuning into Beyond the Darkness.